98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
For today's 4 o'clock reset, which is our daily rundown of the top stories of the day, we started with the Phoenix Suns, who opened up their official bubble play in Orlando today, the first game among the seeding games that counts. And they beat the Washington Wizards 125-112. Devin Booker led the way with 27 points, albeit on 21 shots. He didn't shoot the ball very well, 8 of 21. He did have 5 rebounds and 4 assists, made a couple of three-pointers. The story here, though, is the second half that DeAndre Ayton had for the game, 24 points on 14 shots, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, and he made as many three-pointers as Devin Booker did. Ayton had 2 as well, 2 for 3.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't decide that he wants to be a 2-guard now or a small forward.
I wouldn't worry about
that. Starts challenging Cam for play-in time at the 3. Listen, you still want DeAndre to dominate. And Portland, by the way, Portland just beat Memphis. So it is a final. Portland beat Memphis. He was a dominant player inside. I mean, he had a great game. I mean, he was dominant in this game today, really dominant. So that's good news. If he knocks down a couple of threes, good for him. Good for him. I don't know that he'll ever be a big threat, but he said he was going to work on it, and they're letting him shoot it. And he made 2 in scrimmages, and then he made 2 in this game.
Yeah.
So good for DeAndre. If he could add that as a weapon, we'll take it.
Monty Williams moments ago, his thoughts on today's win by the Suns.
When you're able to win a game like that, where both teams are playing extremely hard, you're going to have some sloppy play. They were physical. We were physical. They got hands on balls. We did the same. We had a tough third quarter as far as turnovers are concerned. I thought that kind of put us in a bit of a mire as far as the offense. And you know, when you turn the ball over like that, you're playing against you got to set your defense, and you don't get an attempt. And so that can be a bit deflating. But I thought we got out of it in the fourth.
If you're looking for help from the bubble, you got some last night from New Orleans. They lost, but as you just mentioned a second ago, Portland, one of the teams the Suns are chasing, they just beat the Memphis Grizzlies, and now they're just 2.5 games back of the Memphis Grizzlies. So a big opening game for Portland in the bubble.
And that was a battle, That was a battle.
Pac-12 Conference announced their revised football schedule for their upcoming season, and it starts for ASU with a matchup against their in-state rival U of A. If everything goes according to schedule, ASU will play the Wildcats on September 26th. And here's the commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, to explain why.
We realize at the moment those are real hot spots and the requisite authorities and approvals necessary are not there yet. By putting them the first week, in the event that these two teams in each of those two markets playing against each other winds up not being possible, they become very easy to reschedule.
And that's the main reason why ASU U of A and USC UCLA are the opening weekend games for the Pac-12 when they start, because they're in California and Arizona, two hot spot states
that may need to reschedule.
That may need to reschedule those games.
It makes sense. Look, you can definitely tell they put some thought into that schedule. Okay, it wasn't just thrown together. There was a lot of thought put into it, flexibility in the schedule, making sure that the rivalry games could get played. I mean, I think that they did a good job. Now, I like some flexibility. I think you need some flexibility. I still think that they are, that there's not a lot of margin for error for college football. Because if you find out on a Thursday or a Friday you got a lot of positive tests and you can't play that game, okay, you're not going to play on Saturday. The big question is, can you play the next Saturday?
Yeah,
that is a fair question.
The Brewers-Cardinals game, the latest to be postponed after another round of positive COVID-19 tests. 2 members of the St. Louis Cardinals, 2 players from the Cardinals tested positive. So tonight's game against the Brewers has been postponed. They're going to try to play the Cardinals and the Brewers tomorrow and then a doubleheader on Sunday. It led to what was a warning given by Rob Manfred, the commissioner, to Tony Clark, the executive director of the Players Association, that if the sport doesn't do a better job of managing the coronavirus, the sport could be shut down for the season.
Tonight in Major League Baseball, Greeny, a full 20% of the games are not going to be going on. This brings up questions about the viability of the season and about just how much Major League Baseball is willing to stomach in terms of positive tests and keep on going.
It is. It's a big question. To me right now, 60 games in 67 days. They tried to put in as many games as possible, which we all wanted, right? We all at the time, like, okay, if you only 60 is better than 50, 60 is better than 55.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is there's travel involved. It's not in a bubble, so teams have to travel. You don't give yourself any leeway in case something happens. How many games are the Marlins got? Are the Marlins even going to play 50 games this year?
Who knows? Yeah.
I mean, can they even play 50?
It's a great question. I don't even know if they can get there. Passan clarified, by the way, that the conversation was not a threat necessarily, just a reality check that everybody needs to do better. Our top story of the day, though, comes to us from the Arizona Diamondbacks, who lost to the LA Dodgers last night by a score of 6-3, and this new and improved Robbie Ray that we heard about ad nauseum during the summer camp for the Diamondbacks instead has made us all nauseous because there's nothing new and there's nothing improved about Robbie Ray. It has been the same old Robbie Ray dealing with the same old issues.
Maybe worse.
You know what? You're right.
Maybe worse.
Actually, because Robbie, I know it's only been two starts, but Robbie had some real positive moments in his Diamondbacks career.
Yeah.
These two starts, if there's been nothing about being able to go deep into either one of these games that Robbie Ray's been able to fly.
Well, there's
so
two
far.
Things. I mean, you know, him pitching so poorly, you only get 12 starts this year. And he's two are down now. He's down two starts. And his ERA is through the roof. He's 0-2 with an ERA of 8.64. He has given up 9 hits and 9 walks in less than 9 innings. He's pitched 8 1/3 innings and given up 9 hits and 9 walks. My first thought is he's costed himself a lot of money. You are not going to be one of the top free agent pitchers out there if you pitch like this. And you've only got 10 games now to make it up. You don't have 30 games to make it up. So you better figure it out. The second thing that crossed my mind is you're not going to be able to trade him. You're Mike Hazen. You're going to lose this guy. You're not going to be able to trade him.
Yeah.
Because who the hell is going to want a pitcher like this? I mean, he's been terrible. I mean, it's beyond terrible. Two outings in a row, he looks like garbage. So if I'm Mike Hazen, I'm like, I'm not going to get a phone call from this guy. You're not.
Yeah.
Somebody might give you I'll take him as for a fringe prospect. But, I mean, his trade value right now is awful.
If he were pitching well, but the Diamondbacks weren't playing well,
they could trade him.
Then they could trade him. And we would probably be having a conversation here in another week or two about whether they should trade him.
Yep.
Whether they should put him on the market with the trade deadline where it is, assuming we can finish this season. But you are 100% correct. If he is pitching like this, there's no conversation to be had.
No, nobody's calling.
You're going to lose Robbie Ray for nothing. And to be honest with you, if he continues to pitch like this during the season, we're going to have to start having the real conversation. He is, especially, of what this shortened season is going to do to his market value as a free agent a few months from now. How much money was he costing himself by performing the way he did during this?
My guess, 1-year deal. If this can, like, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 10 starts. Don't hold me to it.
Okay.
If he ends up with an ERA of 5 this year, if he goes like 3-5 with an ERA of 5.2, he's going to get a 1-year deal. Who the hell's going to give him a long-term contract? I'll give you a 1-year deal. You're my fifth starter. You're not coming in as my, you're not Patrick Corbin. I'll give you a 1-year deal. Prove yourself.
Yeah.
Who's going to give him a multi-year? Be crazy to give this guy a multi-year deal based on the way he's pitching.
Yeah,
he is costing himself a lot of money.
Yeah, and to be fair to Robbie, it's not like he's been like this his entire time here with the Diamondbacks. Robbie's had some very good moments, been a very good pitcher. So maybe I was a little harsh in saying that nothing's changed. These have been two very bad starts for Robbie Ray. He's had some very good moments.
At the worst time.
But the one thing we have seen from Robbie, and you're right, the one thing we have seen from Robbie throughout his entire Diamondbacks career is a maddening inability to get deep into baseball games. It's the one trait outside of his strikeouts that has defined him as a pitcher. That has not changed at all in 2020.
Yeah, but you know what has changed is he used to not be able to go deep into the games, but he kept you in the game. Now he not only can't go deep into the games, he can't keep you in the game.
Yeah.
These two starts have been horrendous.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting taken out because he's getting beat up.
Yeah.
You can't walk 6 batters in a baseball game and you don't even go 5 innings.
We'll talk more D-backs coming up in a little bit, but they're hosting Game 2 against the Dodgers, who, by the way, announced that Clayton Kershaw will start in Sunday's series finale against the Diamondbacks, for what it's worth. The Pac-12 announced that their football schedule is coming out, and they released it earlier today. It will kick off with a bang for ASU, and we'll explain next here on the Burns and Gambo Show. got to admit, as we welcome you back into the Burns and Gambo Show, live from the Yachting Community Studios out here in Ahwatukee at Gambo's house, saw a story this morning. I included it in my email to you, one that suggested that Ohio State and Michigan might open their season
early
against each other, or at least early on in the schedule, and not save that game for late like they do traditionally. And when I read that story, my first thought was, man, I wonder if the Pac-12 is going to do the same thing with its rivalry.
Was it really?
It was. It was one of my first thoughts. I wonder.
Interesting.
And I thought to myself, if this comes up today, if this Ohio State-Michigan thing comes up today, I'm going to bring up, hey, I wonder if the Pac-12 will do that with ASU-U of A or Oregon-Washington or Washington-Washington State. Well, lo and behold, we didn't even have to wait for that to happen because the Pac-12 announced their new reconfigured football schedule for this fall. And absolutely, two rivalries in particular, USC versus UCLA and ASU versus U of A, will be the first game on the schedule for those schools and not the last.
Yeah, so they've approved the 10-game conference-only slate. So they're not, you know, they're not going to play non-conference, which everybody knows. And now they come up with a schedule that when you look at it, you'll see that all the bye weeks are within 3 weeks. Yep. They've left open an open week at the end of the season if any games have to be, you know, played at the end of the season. And they've created a little bit, like a little bit of flexibility. Now, Larry Scott conceded that it may not even be possible to play a 10-game schedule by December 19th or that the spring might be needed to finish it. So, and let's talk about that for a second. Is it possible they play five games, and then they have to stop, and then they finish it in the spring? Yeah, it's very possible. Yep. If they get to a certain amount of games, 8 games, they might be able to say, okay, that's enough. I'm not going to continue in the spring to get 2 more games in. But if they only play 4 or 5, they might say, okay, if we can't play anymore, we'll come back and we'll finish these in the spring because of all the revenue involved in it.
I know Larry Scott's come under a lot of fire, and most of it deservingly so, for how he's run the conference the last couple of years. But I do admire his honesty today when he held a press conference, and he was asked the question, what is your confidence level this season gets played? He was brutally honest about it.
I don't know. I think we are all trying to take a step at a time. We are cautiously optimistic sitting here today. But as Dr. Ackerman mentioned, and we've tried to reinforce, there are elements outside our control that are going to have a lot of influence on that question. What's happening in our communities? What's happening in our campuses? A lot of that's got to do with, right, mask wearing, social distancing, other things. What happens when thousands of students come back to our campus? None of us have the answer to that question.
Now, for ASU specifically, their season, everybody's season in the Pac-12 now that it's conference only, it's scheduled to begin on September 26th. For ASU, it looks like this. At U of A, home against Stanford. At Oregon, off. Home against UCLA. At Colorado, home against Utah. At Washington State, at USC, home against Cal, home against Oregon State. As you mentioned, the bye weeks. Every team's bye week is in a 3-week window, basically. So there's a little bit of flexibility, like 4 weeks into the season when the byes start coming in. Every team's got their bye week in either weeks 4, 5, or 6, I think. And then at the end of the season, the weekend of December 12th is open, so that if a game like ASU U of A is unable to be played because Arizona is too much of a hot spot, that game could be moved to December 12th. So as we're looking at it right now, ASU's opening the season against U of A. It's very possible that they'll end up closing the season against U of A because that weekend is open, and that's the reason why that weekend is open.
So you're saying that game won't be played, the opener? ASU U of A.
I'm saying that's the flexibility they've given themselves. They also
he says Larry Scott, we've got 2 opportunities for each team to potentially reschedule or delay the start. We realize there are some markets that don't have the requisite rules at the moment to start on time. We need to make sure they've got a safe and robust training camp to be able to play on time. If a team can't start on time, we've got the bye week to reschedule, either into the bye week or this December 10th week that we have. So with what you're saying, I think I get it, is if for some reason they can't play in Arizona and California in September, they'll move that game to the end of the season.
Yep. Or to the middle of the season, or to the bye week if they will.
Yeah.
Maybe they, at first they move it to the bye week, and if that doesn't work, then they move it to the end of the season. I don't know, but ASU and U of A, they have exactly the same bye week, so there's an open weekend right there if they want to move that game. Or they could move it to the end of the season where they've got that week in between the regular final scheduled game and the conference championship, which, by the way, the commissioner also announced that title game will not be in Vegas. That title game will be on campus.
We've been in close consultation with our partners at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. We've determined that in order to have the maximum flexibility, nimbleness, and in light of the concerns expected for fan attendance, we're going to play a home-hosted model for our football championship game this year. We've done it before. As many of you know, 3 years, we had a home-hosted game. We know what to do. That gives us the maximum flexibility. We've agreed with our partners in Las Vegas that we're going to just delay the start of our two-year agreement. We're looking forward to kicking off with a bang next year in Las Vegas.
Okay, so there you go.
Starting on September 26th is 2 months from now. They got 2 months before that first game.
Yeah.
We've said this all along. I don't know what the world's going to look like in 2 months. I don't know what the world's going to look like in 2 weeks. Things change. I'm hoping that this pattern doesn't continue. I mean, at some point, it has to change.
Yeah.
At some point, it does. It has to change. The question I would have really is, can you get enough quality practices in to play in 2 months from right now?
Yeah. And along those lines, we had Chris Kirtman on earlier, and I saw this pointed out as well. Larry Scott says the plan right now is that training camp for Pac-12 football can start on August 17th.
So that gives them 6 weeks of practice.
Yes.
Before they play that first game.
And that date is 2.5 weeks from right now. So in 2.5 weeks, you start camp, and then 6 weeks after that, you start the season.
Yeah.
And that's the plan.
And then you cross your fingers and you pray that when you start camp that you don't come down with a lot of positive tests and have to shut down your camp.
Yeah, Ray Anderson, AD over at ASU, called the process exhausting.
Well, you know, it's been exhaustive, to be quite honest, in large part because the fluid nature of this COVID-19 situation has put us all in a position where, for the most part, day in and day out, we didn't have control. And most of us have that, those kind of personalities, and have careers whereby we have had a lot of control. Well, this situation took that away from us. So it's been exhaustive. It sometimes extremely frustrating.
And I'm going to offer a guess on this one. I know for a fact there are a lot of ASU fans who are not happy about a hypothetical where you open the season against U of A and not close the season against U of A. My guess is that if the sport of college football is lucky enough to even be able to play football on September 26th, that by then you won't care. That if you're a college football fan and you're upset today, oh, man, I can't believe they're going to open the season against U of A. That's not tradition. Not the rivalry. My guess is that if this sport is lucky enough to get to September 26th,
you're not going to complain.
With the ability to play football, you're not going to complain
I think we've lost our right to complain about this stuff. If they're going to try to put the season on, I think we've lost. We can't complain about these rules in baseball. We can't complain about fans can't go into the stadiums. Like, I think we've lost our right to complain.
Runner at second base to start the 10th,
seventh inning doubleheaders. Like, who the hell are we to complain? Seriously.
Hey, you know what? I get to go home after the show, and I get to watch a baseball game. I'm grateful for that.
We got done last night with the show, and then, you know, me and my wife sat on the couch, and we watched, you know, Robbie Ray lay an egg together.
Yeah.
But we love it. I mean, we love watching the Diamondbacks, and, you know, we have that. And we'll do it tonight again, too, with Zach Gallen on the mound. I mean, you know, so the ability to – oh, I mean, who's really – I mean, really, you're going to complain that the game's is early in the season instead of late? For what? You lost your right to complain. You shouldn't have a right to complain about that.
Well said, my friend. When we come back, in addition to the Marlins, you can add another team experiencing positive COVID tests within their organization. And today, the commissioner laid down what looks like a warning to the Players Association. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. We were just talking about the Pac-12 schedule a moment ago with ASU now opening the season against U of A, now closing the season against U of A. That is the subject of our Twitter poll of the day, which Sarah Cazell puts together every single day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Thanks, Sarah. If people were listening to the show in the last segment, they probably know how Gambo and I both feel about it. But just in case, let's give out that poll question again and see where we vote.
Yes. So the question specifically with the release of the Pac-12 football schedule for this fall, week one, Arizona, Arizona State, which is usually the end of the regular season, but that is how it will be starting off, at least for 2020. So what do you guys think about that? The biggest game between Arizona and Arizona State starting off the season. Here are the four options to pick from. I hate it. It breaks the tradition of the rivalry. It's great in case the season is cut short. I dislike it, but I get it. Or I am just glad to have any college football.
I should have voted on the last one like you did. I think I said I picked number three.
That's right.
Like, it's not ideal, or it's not, but I'll take it. At this point, I mean, I'm just whatever games they can. Listen, ASU U of A to me is not like the game that I look forward to the most on the ASU schedule. I mean, but I'm being honest.
No, I
it's not. Hey, what game are you looking forward to the most? Oh, I can't wait till they play U of A. Why? U of A sucks.
I don't disagree with you.
Program's a disaster.
Yeah. I don't.
Hey, what game are you looking forward to the most? Oh, do you know? Not the U of A game.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm listening to those answers again, and I know you despise, Sarah, all of the above as an answer to any poll question. You can make an argument that I feel every single way that you just mentioned.
That's true.
About this. I mean, every single one. I'm like, yeah. I mean, I feel all of it, but mostly, like Gambo said, man. If you can give me college football on September 26th, which to me seems like a really big if, I'm not going to complain at all about being handed the in-state rivalry. Fine, it's fine.
Four other games on that schedule that I prefer than the U of A game.
I agree.
At least four.
I do agree with you on that one. Sarah, what's our audience say?
38% of our voters say they will just be happy to have any college football. 30% said, I dislike the move, but I understand the move. 20% said they hate it. They hate that it breaks the tradition. And then 12% say it's a great move in case the season's cut short.
All right, you can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. In the meantime, I want to play this Jeff passing cut as a way to bring in a conversation about baseball, because this is a big weekend for the sport. We'll tell you why in a second.
The season is ever seemingly hanging on the precipice. And that is again where MLB finds itself now. And Rob Manfred and his lieutenants need to ask themselves the question, is this worth it? Because that is a question, Greeny, being asked around baseball in front offices right now. I just got a text from an executive with one of the teams involved today who said very simply, what are we doing?
What are we doing when the Brewers and the Cardinals have to shut it down because two members of the St. Louis Cardinals, both players, have tested positive for COVID-19?
With no connection to the Marlins.
Nope, none whatsoever.
There's no connection to the Marlins. And now a stern warning from Rob Manfred to Tony Clark that the players got to get serious about the coronavirus or else we're not going to have a season. Man, you're not in a bubble. You can't control all this stuff. I mean, I don't think anybody's going out there actively trying to get the coronavirus.
No, but are the players doing enough? And you know where I'm going with this.
Who knows?
Are the players doing enough to make sure that they're taking every precaution that's been prescribed to them by the sport and by the medical people? And you know what? I know neither one of us are big golf fans, okay? But
okay.
I'm going to use this as a comparison. About a month ago, there was a mini outbreak on the PGA Tour. A couple of caddies, a couple of golfers, and the sport kind of had its own little, like, come to Jesus kind of moment where I believe the commissioner came out and basically said, hey, everybody, grow up. Grow up. The stuff that we're asking you to do, the stuff about not touching the same club and the stuff about not touching the rake and the stuff about the things that we've asked you to do. We know you think it's stupid, but we need you to do it if we're going to have a chance of getting through this.
I got a thought on that.
And I wonder if Manfred's threat to Clark, which, Passan reported on, that he, hey, if you guys don't do a better job of managing this, we could shut down the season. I wonder if that's his own mini little come-to-Jesus moment with the sport. Like, guys, it's now or never. We're either doing this or we're not. What are we doing here?
You would not think that the players chewing gum, spitting, slapping high fives, not having a mask on when you're the first baseman and a guy comes to first base, that's you would think that you're not going to get the coronavirus when a guy gets a single and he's standing next to me on first base for, you know, a minute. I would not think that I'm going to get the coronavirus if, you know, we're watching the Red Sox-Yankees right now. If Hicks hits a home run and everybody in the dugout slaps him a high five, I don't think you're going to get the coronavirus that way. But I think that's what Manfred's – are we really doing everything we can?
Yeah.
Are we really – like, are we really doing everything we can? Can we look ourselves in the eye and say, you know, that the players are wearing masks, that the players aren't, you know, spitting, that the players aren't slapping high fives and celebrating after a walk-off? I mean, can we really – and I think that's what he's saying. That's very likely that whoever's, you know, these players that have gotten the coronavirus on the Cardinals and the Marlins and, you know, that they probably got it, you know, outside of the baseball field. That it probably didn't happen on the baseball field. That it probably happened, you know, on a plane, or it probably, you know, happened, you know, the Marlins outbreak. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they had to be on a plane together. Maybe it's possible that it happened there. But I think that's what you're saying is, I mean, yeah. Is everybody really doing are you going overboard to protect yourself?
Right. I went back and looked at the story because you're absolutely right. That's exactly what I've been saying. It was on June 25th when PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan said there will be, quote, serious repercussions, close quote, for offenders if they don't start taking it more seriously. Everybody knows, and this is a quote, everybody knows and needs to know that our future, our ability to sustain this business and to impact the communities where we play and create so many jobs is contingent on our ability to follow these protocols. So when we have instances where someone hasn't, they will be dealt with. And as I said, the consequences will be significant, close quote. Bubba Watson was among those who applauded the news, probably because he's looking at what was going on in the PGA. Hey, man, no one's taking this seriously. No one's doing what they're supposed to do. And I suspect that is the root of Manfred's quote-unquote threat to Tony Clark. Hey, man.
I know you think some of these rules are stupid and the players do too, but we got to do them.
Yeah.
Yep. We have to follow
because
them.
My guess is there is something we don't know behind the scenes that we might not ever know how – Patient Zero became Patient Zero to the Marlins.
I want
to
know so bad.
I know we do. I know, and I do too. Was it a flight attendant? Did the person go out to a bar or a restaurant, whatever the case may be? But it seems pretty clear that behind the scenes, the Miami Marlins did something very, very wrong to allow Patient Zero to become Patient 1, Patient 2,
18.
Patient 18. Right?
Is it 18 players?
I believe it's 18 players
somebody
and two
today,
coaches.
Right? One yeah. player today?
18 players and two coaches. Now, the Cardinals, I don't know how that happened, you know, but it seems like what I read this morning was it's two, and as long as it's only two, then they might play that game tomorrow between the Cardinals and Brewers, and then they might play that doubleheader. What they're basically doing today is what they think they should have done on Sunday between the Marlins and the Phillies. We had four. But we played. Probably a bad idea. Now we've got two with the Cardinals. Let's not play. Let's give it one more day and see if any more positives pop up on the Cardinals. And if not, maybe we're okay to go ahead and play. Because they released their latest numbers again today. And they're not great. Okay, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to sit here and say that the numbers are awesome by any stretch. But here they are. 29 positive tests through Thursday. 21 of the 29 came from the Marlins. The other 8 positive tests, 2 players, 1 player in an alternate site, and 5 staff members.
Problem is you need zero on teams. The St. Louis Cardinals had 2. Are they playing tonight?
No.
That's the problem.
Right.
Like, that's the problem.
But if they continue to just have 2, will they play tomorrow night? That's a question for tomorrow.
Okay.
But I suspect
according to the CDC, they should not play tomorrow. Because those players, you cannot say that they were not in close proximity to their teammates, which means that those teammates would have to quarantine for a certain amount of time. You know, 14 days, probably not, but two negative, but that's what it says.
Yeah.
The rules, you're going to tell me that the 2 positive players on the Cardinals were not in close proximity to any teammates?
I'm sure.
Are you
going
to let all of those guys play and say, you know what? We went back and we checked. They weren't near anybody. Come on, man.
And that's going to be the question for them tomorrow. But as it stands right now, 20% of Major League Baseball is not playing right now.
Right.
20%. Nationals, Blue Jays, Marlins, Phillies, Cardinals, Brewers, 20%. And no.
And some to no fault of their own, like the Brewers.
Sure.
Or the Nationals.
Right.
They didn't do anything wrong.
Nope. Blue Jays haven't either.
No, nope, Blue Jays.
I saw where the Blue Jays thanked the Washington Nationals on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think the Nationals allowed them to use the facility this weekend where they don't have anywhere to go. The Marlins, the ones who are infected, they have to get on a bus and go from Philly to Miami, 1,200 miles, so they can re-quarantine when they get to Miami. That's their method to get home. And there's one Marlins player.
It's not terrible. I used to drive from New York to Florida, 24 hours. You could do it straight through.
There's one Marlins player. Who has tested negative for COVID-19, he might opt out. He might opt out.
I saw that. The second base prospect, Diaz.
Yep, Eason Diaz.
May opt out. And that's a good question, too, now. Like, if you're a player on the Marlins, you're like, hey, man, you know what? Yeah, this ain't worth it.
Yeah.
I don't want it. Like, I don't need to get this thing.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show on this Friday, the Diamondbacks haven't had anywhere close to the type of start to the year they wanted. Could the lineup changes tonight solve some of their issues? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo talk Diamondbacks baseball with a D-backs broadcaster, The Booth.
The Booth. It's a fact, Jack. I'm back. You back. We back.
Yeah, it took us a while to get to this point, but then I guess we could say the same thing about Major League Baseball as a whole. It took us a while to get to this point, and here we are for the first time. This year, our In the Booth feature, in which every single Friday at 4:45 or thereabouts, we get to talk with one of the Diamondbacks baseball broadcasters, I should say, and just kick around baseball topics and what's going on in the sport. And joining us right now, the longtime, forever play-by-play voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, our good friend Greg Schulte, who joins us presumably live from Chase Field. I assume that's where you're at, right?
Yeah, I've been here through seven games and be here for another 53 if they can get them in.
I'm going to be going to one of the games. I think the Padre weekend game I'm going to go to. Greg, how different is it? How different is it for you? You know, to go to the game with very little media there. Well, I'm sure Peggy's not out there serving food in the in the kitchen. I mean, it's got to be so different.
It is, and you really didn't notice it that much on the road because you're concentrating on a lot. I get into that in a moment. What we have to do for road ball games, but the home game, you got a few scattered people here and there, and those are people who belong here that are in the seats. Otherwise, it's. You can hear pretty much everything in the dugout. A lot of expletives are flying around right now. So you have to kind of watch that and do a little apology on the air. But a different setting, to say the least. It's kind of quiet, and it's going to take some getting used to for us, I'm sure. You know, the Diamondbacks' first home chance at it. They played on the road, basically going through the same stuff. But I'll tell you the one thing. It was great seeing some live baseball action last night. Watching guys actually hitting balls and going after balls and pitching and everything else live instead of watching it on TV screens as we had done in the previous six.
All right, give me, because I am fascinated by this, give me the difference on the road.
Okay, on the road we come in, we have two monitors. One is a monitor, a TV monitor, that we get the same TV picture that you guys get at home. We're seeing the same thing. Right next to that, we have placed another TV monitor that has an all-nine look on it. That's the entire playing field. Or was a case in Texas, not quite all the entire playing field. They had the left field area kind of cut off, so we were kind of on our own, flying by the seat of our pants on that. But that gives you an indicator. As soon as a pitch is thrown, I watch the runner. If there's a runner on base, see if he's going maybe on a 3-2 count or a steal. Maybe it's a hit-and-run play. You can look at that monitor and get a better look at a ball into the corner, perhaps, how the runners are moving. So that gives you an idea. You can flip over to that rather quick. But we're playing off that. I've got my computer up. I'm following each pitch on that. I've got a scoreboard. I'm doing reads. So it's a little more busy when you're on the road. But I think overall it's worked out pretty well. I think we've been pretty satisfied with the outcome thus far.
I think about the challenges of that, and I've never called a baseball game in my life, but I think about the challenges of not being able to see the entire field, and probably more so than any other sport. I know you've called a lot of play-by-play for a lot of sports, Craig, but more than any other sport, I got to imagine in baseball it benefits you to be able to see everything all at once. You can properly call the game, and to have to call a game through a TV monitor, especially one like in the NBA, it's a little different, you know. I mean, the camera's following the ball, and you can see everything in the half court. You're really not missing anything. Basically, baseball's got to be drastically different when you're trying to call it just off of a monitor.
And you know, the other thing, Burnsy and Gambo, is a couple of times we've gotten a shot. The live TV will go maybe to a shot of Brentley in the TV booth, maybe holding a baseball and showing a grip, and we can still see that all nine monitor, but. You don't necessarily see, you know, the umpire come up because it's quite a view. It's from way up, so you're not seeing a lot that's going on. So there is where you have to kind of go to the computer and call the ball and strike if that comes up quick enough. So it's a work in progress, but, hey, we like challenges, and it's been fun so far except for most of the outcomes for the D-backs.
When was the decision made as to – and just give me your thoughts on it as to – whether the radio broadcast was going to travel to road games or not?
It was made pretty much a few weeks, I'd say, before we kind of kicked things off. The option was there, and I think there might be a few teams, you know, like the two New York teams, they might be traveling, you know, to Citi Field, to Yankee Stadium. The two Chicagos, they may be happening, but... you know, we'd be on our own. We wouldn't be on the charter. I'm not real keen. I don't think any of us are, Tom or Leo or Mike, about getting on you know, a regular airplane and flying to a city, and then probably each one of us having to get a different car to go to the ballpark to play social distancing the proper way. So I think it was pretty much set in stone that most of the radio broadcast teams were going to stay home and broadcast. Now, we're lucky. We're in the booth. I talked to Victor Rojas, who was my partner for 1 year here in our booth. He said that the Angels weren't going to open the stadium for them to broadcast there. I think there are a few that are done that way. I think there are a few like Boston and a few others that are broadcasting from other studios and not at the stadium. It's kind of nice we're at Chase Field to be able to do the road games because we've got a large booth. We can't social distance. And we still get a little flavor, I guess, of a baseball ballpark. But it's pretty empty in here, and the lights are out, and we're talking, but we're making a go.
Greg Schulte, voice of the Diamondbacks, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, in the booth every single week. We talk with one of the D-backs broadcasters, and we're lucky enough to talk to Greg today. From your perspective, seven games in, it's been rough. It's been real rough. What has been, in your mind, more rough, the pitching or the offense at this point for the D-backs?
I think it's everything. They've had bad base running. Defensively, they've been out of sync a little bit, not necessarily with theirs, but maybe getting out of position. The at-bats are starting to get a little longer for the hitters and a little bit better. And the pitching, all the walks. We have, I think it was 48 three-ball, two-strike counts, full counts on Padres hitters in that first series of the season. And that was four games, so it's a combination of everything. Andrew Chafin the other day comes in facing two left-handers with a 4-2 lead, gets ahead of an 0-2 count on Rougned Odor, who never walks, doesn't want to walk. He ends up walking him, gets ahead of Gallo 0-2 on a 2-2 pitch. Gallo hits a two-run homer. So the two lefties he came into, the three faced, have already got two runs in to tie it. And then the next hitter, Frazier, he gets ahead of 0-2, and he gets a double. It's just been going on like that with almost everybody. And the only three guys who are really hitting the ball right now, I would say on a consistent basis, have been the two Martes and Christian Walker. Everybody else is still trying to find it. I'm anxious to see Zach Gallen pitch tonight. Hopefully a much better ball game than he pitched last time. He had walk issues, but everybody's had walk issues in the rotation for the D-backs. So we'll see how Zach picks it up. But he's got some great stuff, and he'll go up against Tony Gonsolin in the game tonight.
Yeah, thanks for the bad reminder of that three sequence with Chafin and the Rangers. We almost lost our mind over that while we were doing the show.
It was tough.
Torrey has pulled the trigger a little bit. I mean, already they've sent Crone down. They board Varsho up. They pinch hit for Peralta. They pinch hit for Lamb. Torrey hinted early on that, you know what, there's probably going to be shorter leashes with the 60-game season compared to 162, that he might not have the luxury to let a guy go a whole month, you know, trying to figure it out. You know, are you seeing a different Torrey Lovello right now?
Yeah, a little bit, but, you know, he doesn't have any time. I mean, we only got 53 left now, counting tonight, so after this Dodgers series, we'll be down to 50. We'll have a sixth of the season already done, and if you fall too far behind, especially the way the rest of the teams in the National League West have started, they're all playing pretty well, including the Giants. The Diamondbacks could be left, you know, sitting in the bottom here if they don't get it going. So this is important, these last three ball games with L.A. And I just saw a note that Kershaw is going to pitch in the game Sunday now. So it looks like Urias tomorrow night, and then Kershaw will make his season debut Sunday. But, you know, the Diamondbacks have had a lot of good success with him. They've had success against the Dodgers, winning 19 out of the last 30 here at Chase Field, but kind of a clunker last night, and they'll try and get it going here this evening.
Greg, always good to hear your voice. We appreciate you coming on for a little bit, and we're fascinated by the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff that's going on with the broadcast. We appreciate the insight, as always. We look forward to talking to you soon. Have a good call tonight.
All right, you guys stay safe. We're trying to do the same.
Yeah, all right, absolutely. Greg. Same to you, my friend. Greg Schulte joining us from the Diamondbacks radio crew here on the Burns and Gambo Show, live from Chase Field, 6:40 first pitch. D-backs and the Dodgers, Gallen versus Gonsolin, the matchup tonight. But when we come back here on this Friday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show, the Suns took care of the Wizards in their first seeding game of the bubble. Was the win more about what the Suns did or the fact that they were playing the worst team in Orlando? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.